Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast, which is back in transatlantic mode. I'm Jack Collins, live from London. Across the water is Mr. Dean Jones from San Diego. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. England are marching on, so of course I'm happy. Everything's going well, to be honest. England are through, USA are through, Mexico are through, Canada are through. It's all I really needed. You know, that's what I wanted for a good World Cup. And everyone I should be hoping did well is doing well.
Yeah, I think it's very simple. Like, sometimes it is a simple game in that kind of regard. And look, obviously we had England and the US playing yesterday. So today's episode, look, we know our audience are mostly based in the US and the UK. So we thought we'd do a quick pod just recapping the good, the bad, and the questions for both the US after their 2-0 win over Bosnia and Herzegovina that sees them into the round of 16, and England's 2-1 win over DR Congo that sees them into the last 16 as well. So it's going to be a bit of a shorter podcast, just going to wrap through these two teams, the good, the bad, the questions, as we say. There'll be two pods this week, I think. We're going to hopefully do one on Saturday as well, where we look through all of the round of 32 and kind of reassess the favourites coming into that round of 16.
It's the 4th of July on Saturday, Jack, so we're going to have to catch me early that day. We're going to catch me early because it's a big day out here, mate.
100%. I mean, I'm a little bit sad because I come stateside on Sunday and you know, I'm missing the celebrations by a single day, but we'll get something in early, mate. Don't you worry. It suits me anyway.
Will you be on a plane when England are playing, or will you have landed?
I will very much have landed. I fly out of the UK around 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, and I land in Miami about 2 p.m., which is just in time for the first kickoff, which will be Brazil versus Norway. And then we'll be comfortable and ensconced by the time we get to see Mexico against
England. I flew obviously back. People don't, you know, people that aren't on the Patreon won't know the full story, but obviously I've been in the UK for the last 2 weeks, and then I flew back to the States the other day, and on my flight was a Norwegian family while Norway were playing against Ivory Coast. And so on the flight, it did have paid for Wi-Fi, but it was quite hard to access, but I'd got on it quite early. So I was on it, and I was... yeah, giving a blow-by-blow account to this Norwegian family in the row behind me. I couldn't quite get the feed. Like, occasionally I could dip into, like, the YouTube, like, feed of the game was, like, going in and out. So occasionally I was getting glimpses of the game, but basically watched, minute by minute of it, and I was recounting it to them. And then as soon as it ended, I was able to load them up the highlights, and it was good to see them going through the meal. But I was like, this looks like torture. This is absolute torture.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the agony and the ecstasy of football, right? When we see it, especially in these knockout stages, every game is laced with such kind of determinism. It's such an interesting factor in all of it. I mean, if you go on the right plane, you can see the games live. Courtesy of my friend.
Internally, yeah. I don't know if that happens, you know, across the Atlantic. I'm not sure they're doing that. But yeah, certainly internally on some of the flights, you can definitely see games.
I know for a fact that BA have just secured a deal with Sport 24 to do that across transatlantic flights.
It was a bit late. It was on Saturday and it was on it. I was on British Airways.
Yeah, mate, there's only 5 flights at the moment that use it. So you have to be lucky at the moment. But yeah, shout out to the guys at Sport 24. Right, let's go over to the USA, shall we? A 2-0 win over Bosnia and Herzegovina. Flo Balogun with the first. He was later sent off. We will discuss that. And then Malik Tillman calling game with a free kick late on when the US were down to 10 men. And I think we should start with the good of all of this, Dean, because there's plenty of positives, I think, about everything related to this US camp. And to be honest, the bad section is going to be quite short because I think that they have already exceeded expectations. Reaching the round of 16, I think, was kind of par in terms of where the expectations were pre-tournament. But to come out and win so convincingly and so stylishly as well in those first two group games to get the job done in the first knockout game, I think the entire kind of feeling around the US is incredibly positive right now.
mate, even the defeat to Turkey didn't really matter. I mean, they've lost with the last kick of the game in a game that was a dead rubber. So like that game in itself didn't matter either. So obviously they will be feeling the full momentum of this ride that they're on. It's definitely captured the hearts and the imagination of fans that wouldn't normally care about the sport here. You're definitely seeing it latch on. I mean, America is a nation that only wants to be involved if they're winning, right? And they're doing that. Obviously, there was a bit of a joke coming into the tournament, the adverts that were going on TV saying, do you believe, you know, believe in miracles, America can win the World Cup. And they like mocked up this image of them scoring the World Cup winning goal. And at the moment, you know, they're probably about the fourth or fifth best team at the World Cup, to be totally honest with you. Everything about their game has been impressive. For me, the thing that I like most about their play is an understanding between the players and the relationships that exist between them. I think the US have an extremely strong starting 11 and probably three beyond that. They've got 14 you can rely on. If you're getting deeper than that, if you're getting into extra time, I do worry about them. But if you're matching them up from the start against everyone, then they're good. Obviously, the Balogun thing we'll talk about in a bit because that does change things slightly. But their play down the wings is just, it's so good. And they play Belgium next. And they have absolutely nothing to fear against that team. I mean, obviously on this podcast, I've been slating Belgium. And I still don't think they're good, mate. I still don't think they're good.
Belgium should be out. I don't really understand what happened.
Belgium should be out twice, as far as I'm concerned. Like,
wild. Wild in so many ways. And look, I really feel for Senegal because they were just such the better side for 85 minutes of that game. And then they just had a complete emotional collapse towards the end of it. And, you know, ultimately Belgium have profited and look, then gone on to go and win the game. And you've got to give them credit for finding that when everyone thought it was done. You know, everyone thought it was a sunset on KDB's international career, maybe Romelu Lukaku's international career, and they've pulled one more out of the fire. But I think I agree with you. And I was on a radio station in Washington last night after the game, you know, before the US game, but just after the normal time of the Belgium-Senegal game. And it was still 2-2 at this point. And they were like, well, who do you think would be a better matchup for the US? And I was like, well, Senegal should win this game because they've been the better team. Like, it would be, you know, more right, you know, and I know that football is a weird game, but like they go through because they were just the superior side for the majority of the game. But I would say that, you know, I said to them that I think if I was the US, I'd be looking for Belgium. And I know that obviously there's the history in terms of the March friendly and the way that that went, and I get it. But actually, if I was looking to play one of these two sides right now, even the fact that Belgium won that game late on and have, you know, a clear resilience and a clear fight about them and there's still some gas in the tank, if I was the US, I'd be looking at that as a matchup and thinking, well, the physicality we have feels like more of a threat against Belgium than perhaps it would have against Senegal.
Yeah, I mean, there's a never say die attitude about Belgium, which has helped them cling on in this tournament, as well as the fact they got to play against New Zealand, who turned out to be one of the worst teams there. And they've managed to stay in and hang around. But I think that the energy that the US have and the front-footedness of their play is going to cause serious problems to that Belgium team. And you've just got to make sure that there's no life left in them once we get to the latter stages of that game on Monday. But absolutely, we're in a situation here where the US are in a knockout game to go through to the quarterfinals, as far as they've ever got, right, at that point, that will be. And like, they can dream.
1930, I think, is worth pointing out.
But they can dream, mate. And it's like, what I like about, like, down the left, like Robinson and Pulisic, like, just take that as an example. Like, it, that is a proper combination. That is so strong. And the fact that it's mirrored on the other side with Freeman and Dest is like, it's so good. And then the three in the middle are as energetic a combination as you're ever going to get. Like, I just love the fact that they have managed to bring everything together in time for this tournament because it was so patchy. Since Poch took over, obviously all the focus was on making sure that this World Cup was a success, and it is now a success no matter how it ends. But there were periods, obviously, when it's extremely unconvincing. It's not that long ago that they were taken apart by Belgium, right?
And Portugal.
But it was all part of a learning, and it was all part of getting the best players in place to come together. And that's happened. And it's really, really impressive. And I just think that it's not just about momentum and feel-good factor. This is a genuinely technically good team.
100%. And look, you mentioned them there, but a word for Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie and Malik Tillman, because one, they're covering ground like nobody's business. I posted a tweet yesterday saying I'd love to see a heat map, and all you can get is individual ones. So I kind of mapped them all together to try. It's not particularly pretty. It's not, you know, as dynamic as I'd want it to be. But what
it was a good try, mate. I liked it.
The amount of ground that's being covered by these three, the engine room of this, but also, and I tweet this, their skill sets mesh so beautifully as well, because Adams is there at the base. He sweeps up, he recycles, he recovers the ball and gets the US back on the front foot. Malik Tillman's there to control the game a little bit more. He glides around. He's beautiful, kind of under pressure and so, so press resistant. But also what he does is pull strings. And I've been talking about Malik Tillman. I've been sort of having a couple of discussions with some people who are like, I don't really see it. I don't really see what he brings to the table. And I think there's a couple of moments, especially in the Australia game, I think that I kind of picked out. I thought it was brilliant for what it's worth yesterday against Bosnia. But one of the things he did after the US went 1-0 up, he just dinked a couple over for Flo Balogun to run onto. And a defence that needs to step out, especially if they're a goal behind or they're chasing a game, and we're in knockout football now where obviously everyone wants to win and progress. When a team is chasing a game, his ability to just ping one over the top for a runner gives the defence a kind of moment to be like, okay, we can't actually push too high up. And he has that within his locker in like real split second moments. And I think what it does, it forces opposition defences backwards. And then those combinations that you're talking about down the flanks with Pulisic and Robinson or Dest on the other side are allowed to kind of get into those spaces and occupy them, which is where they want to be playing their football. So he's doing a beautiful job in terms of just controlling the game in that manner. And then you've got Weston McKennie, who bursts forwards, he gets in behind, he crashes the box. His runs in behind the Bosnian back three yesterday, I think, were the moment that the game really opened up for the US. And the way that they're playing together, they're just a perfect little midfield trio. And the entire system revolves around their ability to play together and understand each other's roles. And look, this is a major, major positive. I have a sort of flip side of it in a minute. But when you kind of look at it from that perspective, they have been absolutely phenomenal, I think.
Yeah, that back heel from Tillman into Pulisic was lovely. And then obviously Tillman has scored one of the greatest goals in their history, to be honest with you, mate. Like, it was so important. And the beauty of it was sublime. I mean, it's kind of been overshadowed by Balogun because of the hero/anti-hero thing. But Tillman, for me, was the story of that game. Like, he was phenomenal in every single sense. And in that moment, obviously down to 10 men, I'm not even going to say trying to hold on because they weren't even clinging on at that point. They were playing still very well and in control.
Yep.
But obviously you wanted that extra buffer. Get a free kick, 20 yards out, whatever it is. And the technique with which he hits it, like that kind of side top foot, whatever part of your foot you want to describe that as he kind of just dinks. What do we call it? We had a name for this, Jack. There was an episode once on Ranks back in the day where we talked about all the different types of free kicks and we gave them all stupid names. And this one definitely got a stupid name off me, but I can't remember.
It was sort of like the dink and flink or something like that.
It was something ridiculous like that. You're right. Go back and listen. It's only about 200 episodes ago.
Might have been multiple Ranks, to be honest.
Yeah, probably. But I just thought it was a magical moment that's so well deserved for him. That stadium was so noisy. Like there was one point when the game was at 1-0 and the whole stadium was chanting USA. it was so loud coming through the TV. Now, I've heard that apparently the BBC coverage didn't actually manage to convey the noise very well from inside the stadium. I said a few tweets saying, like, what happened with that? But it came through loud and clear on the Fox coverage here, I can assure you. It sounded amazing. And obviously at the end, they're there singing Country Roads. And yeah, and it must feel now like anything is possible. I don't think anything is possible because I still think winning the World Cup is probably a stretch. But the quarterfinal is quite easily within reach here.
Eminently possible is how I would describe it. Although they're going to have to do it with a couple of different things. And look, let's move on then, I suppose, to the bad. And the big one is Balogun is sent off for the challenge on Muharemovic. Now, there's been a lot of discourse around this right now. And first and foremost, I don't think this is a red card, right? Like, I don't think there's
close to a red card. It's so annoying.
One, any malice in it. Two, any intent in it. He lands, you know, unfortunately on Muharemovic, whose ankle buckles underneath him during the landing. And I think the thing that's annoyed me a little bit about this is, look, again, I don't think it's a red card. I think that when you slow that down, it's obviously going to look worse in real time. There's no way that's given, right? But I think that some of the false equivalences to other things that have happened in the tournament are annoying me a little bit in terms of the way that they're being discussed. And the big one is obviously the Lionel Messi challenge or in the Algeria game. And look, for what it's worth, that's not a red card either, right? Like, it's a yellow card challenge because it's high. But if you actually watch it back rather than just seeing the still, there is just a moment where there's no force or intent in that challenge. It should have been booked. It should have been a yellow card. 100%. I've said this on the Patreon already. I fundamentally believe it should have been booked for it. It's a bad challenge. I don't think it's a malicious challenge. And I think that them not looking at that and not upgrading it to a red card was the right decision. That this one being decided wrongly doesn't make that one wrong. And I don't like the fact that these are being kind of discussed in the same wavelength, because I think it's disingenuous to the argument. Because I think what's happened here is the referee's been sent to the screen, and the reason he's sent Balogun off in a different way to that Messi challenge is because when he lands, the actual force on Muharemovic's ankle that buckles it, right, is really gruesome to watch. Like, when you actually see the challenge, you're like, ugh, that's potential ankle breaker. Now, that shouldn't change it, and that's outcome bias. In the same way that when we talked about the Qatar red card for the challenge on Ismaël Koné, the challenge isn't actually that bad, but he breaks his leg. So the referee doesn't really have a major choice in terms of how he goes about it and sending him off. Now, this for me is like, I'm trying to have this conversation with people and be like, there is a sensible way to be like, that's not a red card. And also not being like, look at these other things. The reason it is because, you know, the outcome bias and the fact that it's been slowed down has clearly impacted the referee's judgment on it. And I think that's a bad thing. But I think the kind of whataboutism is not necessarily helping the argument.
Yeah, like the still image of it is just so annoying because it's just like not a true reflection of what was going on in that moment at all. Like, football's a contact sport, and you just accept, like, sometimes you're going to get hurt, sometimes your limbs are going to get tangled up, or you're going to get a kick. And there was just, it was just so frustrating. And to take it on, like, obviously the most frustrating thing of it all wasn't that he had to leave the pitch that day, it's that he doesn't get to come onto the pitch for the next game. Because that is, it just brings a layer of doubt to the game plan, to their chances of getting through. Like, Balogun starts, I'm like 70% USA are going to win that game. With Pepe or Haji Wright or, I don't know, Pulisic as a false nine, it just changes things, you know. It's just like, this was just working. Balogun was confident. Balogun is the guy that you're looking for in those moments. He so keeps sticking the ball in the net. Half of them are, you know, offside or disallowed for some reason, but he's always sticking them away, pretty much anyway. Obviously he hit the bar with one yesterday, which still a good effort. He's always in there trying to make that difference. And now that isn't there. So I just find it so hard to take. Poch fuming about it, says it's not a red card. He's right, it's not a red card. But the US now have to come up with a way to deal with this. I assume it will be Pepe that gets the nod. I think it makes the most sense. It's the most tried and tested of the alternate options.
Yeah, I mean, look, has had 1 minute. And look, it takes us on to our little question segment, which was, you know, to begin with, who replaces Flo Balogun against Belgium? Haji Wright is more stylistically similar than Pepe in that he will get off the shoulder. He wants to run in behind, but he's played 1 minute at this World Cup.
It doesn't seem to be in the picture, does he? So
you'd imagine it is Ricardo Pepe, who I think has done okay, but is a very different player to Flo Balogun. And when you look at it, you know, rewind back a little bit to that Senegal game in the kind of pre-tournament warm-ups. I thought that Ricardo Pepe looked really, really good in that game, linking play, bringing others into it, a couple of passes around the corner, and maybe the US do, you know, going to go for that moment and go for a facilitator rather than a kind of off-the-shoulder, ice-cold killer in the box. But I think that Balogun's impact in this tournament and the way he stretches back lines shouldn't be underestimated. And look, to my point earlier about Malik Tillman being able to dink one over and allowing back lines to basically have to retreat a little bit because they're worried about that ball over the top, that doesn't exist quite so much if you've got Ricardo Pepe in there. And I think that maybe changes the outlook of how the US go about their game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are things for Poch to consider this week. And I think that it is a little bit more complex than just assuming he just goes for Pepe and gives him his chance. And it's going to be the big talking point of the week in terms of what you can do there. But yeah, Haji Wright, I think you make a good case for. Pulisic is where things become a bit more complex, really, because he's not a natural player in the sense that Balogun is to go there, but obviously he did play centre forward against Portugal a few months ago, and he has the ability to hold that role. He has the nous, he is a player of great pedigree, and if he then comes in, then you've got Gio Reyna or Tim Ware or Brendan Aaronson or whoever who can come in into one of the other spaces, and it'll open things up there. I mean, there is the small possibility that Pepe and Haji Wright start together. If they were to completely change things and go a 3-5-2, I would say that would be probably bolder and braver than you need to be going. But it's certainly something that can be brought up into the discussion while we're waiting to find out what Poch does on Monday. But
the other thing you mentioned him there, I wouldn't be completely and 100% surprised. I don't think he would do this, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if he played Tim Weah through the middle just to kind of stretch. And, you know, because he is and always has been as a winger, an in behind runner. Like, yeah. I wonder if there is just a slight similarity in the way that they might go about that. I think it's unlikely, but it wouldn't shock me 100%.
Yeah, I think we're probably gets the edge over like a Reyna or an Aaronson if you're looking for someone to play a similar sort of role. He has done it before. I don't think it's, where is it? He's played a lot of positions before. He's played about 8 positions. So he really is a utility man at this point.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I would too, but I don't think it's completely and utterly out of the question. I mean, look, final bit on the US, two more quite a quick questions. One of them you mentioned was like, is there any game changers on the bench? And I think maybe my actual change of that question would be, is there a concern that this midfield engine room that I waxed lyrical about beforehand is being worked to exhaustion, right? Because one of them comes off yesterday and it's McKennie in the 95th minute, right? So they play the entirety of this game and they had to, given the circumstances available to them. Sebi Bahalter, I think, did a very good job in the Turkey game. I thought he was the best player on the park in a US shirt, but he's a slightly different type of midfielder. And I do worry that, you know, if this was, as you said earlier, if something did go to extra time, or there is a concern that maybe these games adding up and getting quicker and quicker doesn't give necessarily the recovery time to those three, that the system might not quite work as effectively.
Yeah, I mean, possibly, but I mean, you could flip that and say, well, how's De Bruyne going to be able to cope with that game? And he's certainly got more miles.
After 50 minutes.
Yeah, you know, Tielemans or whoever that they end up playing in there. But I give them a lot of hope, and I'm relieved from their perspective that this game is being played in Seattle, because at the moment there is a heat wave going on down the east coast of America, which, you know, today alone we're looking at temperatures of like 90 to 100 degrees. But over on the west coast, we're quite chill at the moment, mate. We're like 70, mid-70s. And it's going to be looking right now like quite a nice holiday weekend here that runs into Monday, and you're probably looking at Seattle being around 72 degrees. So I think that helps in the sense that, you know, they're not going to have that exhaustion, and with the hydration breaks thrown in as well, everybody should be good.
Fingers crossed, eh? Fingers crossed. I think things are looking bright for the US side, although the question remains, and we can't answer it, how do they deal with a game state that doesn't involve them just being ahead in a game? But we don't know the answer to that, and we can't find out until it happens. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. Right, we'll take a quick break then. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk all about England. Make sure you stick with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you. We've done the US. Let's flip over the Atlantic to England. They won 2-1 against DR Congo with a late Harry Kane brace, seeing them come from behind and set up a round of 16 game against Mexico at the Azteca. I mean, look, let's start with the positives, Dean. The positives are that Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham both look full of confidence and full of belief. I think that there is now a fundamental belief and fight in this team that maybe has been lacking before, maybe not in recent years, but I think to come from behind in that kind of game, in that kind of scenario, and just continue to trust the system suggests that these players have a real faith in what they're doing. They've overcome deep blocks in their last two games. They might not face any more of those, but those were question marks. And they've got quite good at growing into tournaments in recent years. And I think that, you know, we saw at the Euros 2 years back, and I was at Glastonbury in those kind of opening stages of it, and then for the Slovakia game and the Jude Bellingham overhead kick. And everyone was like, I'm done with this team. I can't watch them. Like, what is this? This is absolute nonsense. And then 2 weeks later, the flags are out, the bunting's up, and England are in a European final. Obviously, that didn't go to plan from an England perspective, but you know, you look at the way that they've grown through a couple of different tournaments after having slightly gritty group stages, and there's a faith, I think, that they might be able to do something similar again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but I'm definitely not as down on this team for their performance against Congo that some people were. I mean, it's even the BBC, you know, England were 15 minutes from one of the most abject humiliations in their World Cup history.
Also, it's like absolute nonsense to talk about this DRC side like that. Like, like they are a really, really well-drilled unit who have already shown their defensive capability and their threat in transition in this World Cup and have done so, you know, a multitude of times before. And it just, like, it frustrates me because there are lots of people giving analysis about these kind of things who, you know, haven't watched this side, you know, ahead of this World Cup, didn't watch them in qualification. Like, we knew exactly what this game was going to look like, and not necessarily, you know, actually I was a little bit surprised by how fun DR Congo were in transition. They went with a three up front rather than a five at the back, which was interesting. And they gave England a real scare, but no one should have been hugely surprised by their ability to create things in the final third if you've watched them play at any point in this tournament.
Yeah, obviously, I didn't expect them to score after 6 minutes, I'll give you that much, but it made for a good game. I thought the game itself was brilliant. And, you know, again, the articles comparing this to when England were beaten by Iceland at Euro 2016, it just didn't feel like that at any point to me. Like, for the first 20 minutes, yeah, England weren't good. Like, and absolutely, I was concerned with the way that things were going. But then we started to, like, assert our authority. And obviously, like, the Congo goalkeeper's had the game of his life. And you start going through it, and you're like, okay, so people think England didn't play very well. England didn't do this, didn't do that. Bellingham's had two headers brilliantly saved. Kane's had a point-blank range volley that the keeper's managing to be in the right place for. Wan-Bissaka's managed to be in the right place to stop a Rashford shot that 9 times out of 10 is going to find its way into the bottom corner. Harry Kane, 90% certain, should have had a penalty, right? And that's just in the first half. You move on to the second half, the goalkeeper makes a save from Bellingham. There's a goal line clearance. Rashford sticks one into the side netting that 90% of the time he goes across to the other corner and ends up in the back of net. And then we score two goals. That's 10 clear chances on goal, Jack. Like, it's really not that bad. And, like, Portugal struggled against this team. Other teams that are in this tournament would have struggled against this team.
Colombia created chances, but struggled to break through as well. Like there are good attacking forces that have already kind of come up against this side. And Lionel Messi has had one of the tournaments of his life. Everyone's saying, you know, game of his life. He was brilliant against Portugal. He was brilliant against Colombia. He's been brilliant again here. Are we shocked at this point that Lionel Messi has had a stunning performance in goal? Like it's odd, some of the kind of narrative that comes around it. For what it's worth, The penalty shout, I think, is interesting because I think that if Harry Kane had just kept running like a normal person, he would have got a penalty. But instead, he decided to do his best Tom Daley impression, feet together, hands in the air, 9.8 from me. Like, it was a really strange one where if he just continued on a normal run instead of deciding to go down, and I've said this before, we talked about it with the Champions League podcast, etc. People need to just become better at diving. Like that there's absolutely no reason for him to take the contact in the way that he did. If he just carried on running, he would have been brought down and it would have been a penalty. I'm not surprised the ref didn't give it.
Well, I'm surprised the ref didn't get it. He got VAR to go and see if the goalkeeper touched him or not, and he did. So it doesn't really matter. Like, Harry Kane knew that the contact was coming and he's gone down. Like
he's played
the best in the world doing this. Does it all the time. Like, can't say you've never seen Harry Kane go down like that. He's done it loads of times.
No, but isn't he just, like, he goes before the contact. It's weird.
No, I know. I understand what you're saying. He knows what's about to happen. Like, Harry Kane's been in that situation many more times than that referee's been standing watching that situation. The pass, by the way, was absolutely unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so this is the thing, right? And I'm just refusing to be too down on the display. I'm not saying that we are world beaters right now because we're not. But I definitely think that there are way more positives to take from this performance than we're getting. Getting plaudits for, like, Bellingham, outstanding. Kane, like, the goal pedigree is just insane. And then you've got the fact that we've got these wide players and we just don't know game to game which of the four of them is going to have a good game. Like, is it going to be Rashford? Is it going to be Gordon? Is it going to be Madueke? It's probably not going to be Saka from what we've seen so far. But ultimately, there are four great options to have, and you've got Eze in the mix. So, obviously, like, Tuchel's trying to manage that, and so far he's kind of got it right. And it worked here, Gordon coming off the bench to set up Kane twice.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. He's got it right enough on a couple of different occasions that it's changed games and been something that's worked. And you've got to rely on your superstars. And I do think it feels a bit like Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham plus nine at the moment, but there is time for that to change in some regard.
No, Elliot Anderson's been great. There's been a few, I think, that have stood up.
He's been fine. Like, I think he's been fine. I don't think he's shown quite the kind of poise that he's shown at Nottingham Forest. And that comes with having different players around you. I think to come on to some of these question marks, right? Like, Ezri Konsa is defending a bit like a lunatic in this tournament. And I'm not quite sure why he's doing that, because that is not what he does for his club. Obviously, the right back area remains a major concern with Reece James out. And as you say, you know, that threat from wide areas is a little bit muted, even if it's working enough. And I suppose the question becomes, who plays right back against Mexico? Because Quiñones has been their most dangerous player. And that looks at the moment a little bit sketchy.
Mate, I'd play Declan Rice. I genuinely think I would, because I think that you've got better options to replace Declan Rice in the middle of the park than you have for the risk that's going to exist down that right side. So it's not just the right back that concerns me. It's the fact that there might be Konsa alongside that person. And then you've got like Saka or Madueke in front of them who aren't having a particularly good time of things either. Like, that right side terrifies me. Whereas if you put Declan Rice there, and I know this isn't ideal, but if for this game you do put Declan Rice there, it just brings more security to the situation. And then you can look to the centre and I don't know if you play Jordan Henderson or if you play Kobbie Mainoo or what you do, but there are options there that can go into the middle and try to secure things. I don't think Jordan Henderson would be the worst option in the world, to be honest. It's Mexico in a game where you've got to contain people. So I don't think he'll do this from the start, but obviously we did see Declan Rice end the last game at right back. We've seen him play a couple of games for Arsenal now and then when he fills in at right back, and people have actually talked a lot about the fact that Declan Rice would on his own just be a great right back if he wanted to be. But you do obviously lose his energy. You do read his game reading abilities. And Jordan Henderson absolutely can't match what Declan Rice gives you in that sense.
No, absolutely not. I mean, look, if this was a game that I thought England were going to control for the entirety of it, I think you probably would put Kobbie Mainoo in there and maybe kind of that works a little bit more in their favour.
But you drop Bellingham back and you could put Eze forward or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've tried that obviously already. Morgan Rogers could play in that hole. I think there are solutions. It's just going to be an interesting one to go into the Azteca. Obviously, difficult conditions. It's going to be a raucous crowd. We talked about the altitude. Thomas Tuchel's come out and spoken about the altitude and be like, yep, we can't prepare for it. It's like, well, I'm pretty sure you could. You know, there are options here. You can do the thing where you fly in and fly out again before it hits you, etc., which is, you know, the old Commonwealth trick of trying to come out of those situations. Like, but it does feel to me that, you know, there's a lot riding on this game. And some of these, I'm with you in that I think the positives from the DR Congo performance far outweigh the negatives. But I think the questions remain in terms of how England go and deal with a Mexico side who are not just, you know, riding a wave of incredible support and very much feel like manager and nation and team and crowd are all aligned in the same kind of way, but also are just playing some of the best football of the tournament. And I think that's the slight difference with what this game ends up like. And look, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that England, you know, will play better once teams, you know, come out and meet them a little bit more, that they'll have more space to expand into. And whilst I kind of appreciate the fact that England did play very well against Croatia, who probably have played the least low blocky, I suppose, of all of these sides that they've faced so far, I don't know if there's enough evidence to suggest that the energy levels are right up where they need to be in order to make that statement fundamentally 100% true. And everyone just seems to be kind of spouting it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, in Mexico, you've got a team that are currently ranked 10th by FIFA, right? Like, this is a proper top-tier opponent who don't lose home games. This is an extremely difficult game. I think if you go through the lineups player by player, England are better, but that is usually the case with England. Like, that's not an unusual thing. You know, you've got a central midfielder who just joined Man City for £100 million and things like that. You know, Mexico haven't got these same sort of options. But what they have got is a team ethic, a togetherness, a belief, a way of playing, as well as individual brilliance when they need it. And that's going to be really hard to combat for England combined with the conditions. I mean, it's continuing to look like it could be stormy building into it. You know, you combine that with the altitude as well, plus the fact the stadium, England will travel as well as they can to that game and there'll be as many fans as possible getting tickets for it. But obviously we're going to be well outnumbered inside that stadium. And it's
in a way, it hasn't really been yet, actually, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, it is all against us for this game. And I haven't actually looked at the odds for it yet. I'm going to do that later today to properly dig into what the expectations are of it. I'm sure England are slight favourites, but I'm not sure if we should be, to be honest.
I think they will be slight favourites, and I think they probably should be, in that, you know, you just made the point there that, and we to kind of rephrase an old Sam Tyism, right? The team with the better players usually wins games.
Like, it's more the case that what we've seen so far is that Mexico might be the best team at the tournament. Like, they are definitely the most fun to watch. They are the best attacking threat team in terms of having no fear. Sorry?
France.
Yeah. But I'm talking, like, just in sense of, like, the thing is, France, you know, are going to do that. With Mexico, there's still a sense of surprise and underestimating them that comes with it. Like, even Mexico's last game, I didn't think they would come out and play the way they did in that first half as well as that. They were unbelievable. In their last group game against the Czech Republic, like, it's a dead rubber. They go and smash three goals past them and celebrate them all like they mattered. Like, I love that. It's a really tough one, this, for me, because, like, as an England fan, I love to hate who we're playing, especially at this stage of a tournament. I don't hate Mexico. I really don't. Like, I love a lot about Mexico. I think the team is a good team. They're fun. The fans are great. Obviously, I live in San Diego, so loads of Mexicans here who are gearing up for it.
Was that really a pun? If that was a pun, that's the best pun you've ever done. Gearing up for it.
Yeah. I'm not that clever, mate.
That was almost the best thing you've ever said.
Let's redo it and put it on video and I'll pretend I did mean it. But yeah, I do have a sense of fear for this one, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't, as an England fan, want to have a sense of entitlement. I don't want to feel like we deserve to win a game before it's a ball has even been kicked. And I feared with Congo that that's how a lot of people felt about the game. And I spoke on the Patreon about, I really didn't feel like that. I was like, we have to earn our place at this World Cup and show that we are legit. We deserve to be in the top four or five favourites for this World Cup. And after we've eventually come through that, I think that we have. I've watched other teams. If I'd have been watching that and that had been Brazil, I'd have been thinking, ah, oh, they've come good when it mattered. Just like I did think about Brazil when I watched them the other day.
Yeah.
You know? And so I watch other teams do it and I'm like, well, that's pedigree. That's a sense of never say die. That's a true trait of why they're good. But I watch England and people are like, oh, we got a bit lucky. Oh, that was a bit rubbish. No, it's not. That's football. And that's how football matches play out. Like, we're on the best stage of football you could ever imagine. You're not going to come up against rubbish players at this level, right? There aren't any rubbish Mexico players. Unfortunately, we've all left all the rubbish players behind in the qualifiers. There's a few that made it to the World Cup, but most of them have gone home now. And there's certainly none on show in this fixture. It's going to be a brilliant game, I think. I'm really excited about the fixture. I'm nervous. All the feelings, Jack. And I did consider going. I was in straight after the game, watched it in an English pub here in San Diego. And yeah, there's loads of English in there, obviously. And then was chatting to someone outside. He was in the England away supporters club and he'd sold his ticket for that particular game. And he was talking about the fact that, like, flights from Tijuana, which is obviously 20 minutes from me, are like $150 to get to Mexico City. So it's easy to get to, but do you want to be in Mexico City if you haven't got a ticket? I don't know necessarily that you do, to be honest. I'd probably rather stay in America. But this guy was looking at prices and he was like, he wanted to go to the game, but he's like, I think I can get 10 grand if I sell this. 10 grand! And that's weird, isn't it? And I was like, oh, that as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, that rules me out of going to the game. I'm not playing that. But yeah, we'll see where we get to, mate. But I'm excited. As a, I don't know if you are neutral because you hate England, but what is your view on how that game actually plays out?
I don't. I've got no horses in this race. I'm happy. I want, as usual, I want the best team at a tournament to win the tournament.
You don't. You want Mexico to win.
No, I don't. I haven't got any Mexican shirts, although I did find some Mexican ancestry. No, I'm joking. But you kind of look at it and kind of look at all of these different things. I think if England get through this game, if they pass this test, they reach a semi-final minimum. Like, I don't think like a Brazil or a Norway in Miami holds any fear for England if they beat Mexico at the Azteca, right? And then yeah. If you get to the semi-final and it probably be Argentina, that's maybe who a different knows? Game. And who knows at that point? But I think if England pass this test, they get to semi-final. I think it's very tight. And I think it's all about riding those early waves of pressure. If England ride those early waves out, I think they probably do have the quality in depth. And actually, this is one of the points I was going to make about earlier on in terms of the good, but I didn't get around to it. So this is a nice time to put it. England have a manager in Thomas Tuchel who is astute enough to make tactical tweaks. I don't think it is any surprise whatsoever that England scored two goals after that hydration break in the second half yesterday. I think that Tuchel is the kind of manager who has pieces to play with and he plays them and deploys them in a different way. And I think that compared to teams who maybe don't have as many superstars as DR Congo didn't, the ability to just change the game a little bit in those hydration breaks is something that actually suits England. And so they will be booed left, right and center by fans of everyone, right? But actually, I think England fans maybe should have some reconsideration about that in terms of how England go through this tournament, because I think they really suit a team of England's caliber because of the manager that Thomas Tuchel is and the fact that he wants to tinker in these breaks to try and make his team better. I don't think that there's a coincidence in England scoring in those two things. So I would say that if England ride out the early waves, if they're level at half time, they probably win this game.
Yeah, look, we'll be happy for the breather at the very least in the Azteca to get to have our couple of minutes to ourselves and listen to Tuchel try to put things right if that is what needs to happen. But yeah, we'll see, mate. We'll see. That's a hell of a pathway you just spoke about. Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, France is basically what it's going to take for England to go and win the World Cup. And difficult to see right now, but one game can change everything.
Yeah, as the old adage goes, to beat a man, you've got to beat the man, right? And England are very much going to have to do that. Although, you know, most people would point it and say that they're on the softer side of said draw. So, you know, it's a weird one in some regard. Doesn't look that soft from where I'm standing.
Doesn't feel that soft, no.
Is probably how I would put it. But then again, there are no soft matches at this World Cup, unless you're France, apparently. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say a massive thank you to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. We'll try to get back together at the weekend, take a little re-rank of the favourites after this round of 32 before Dean goes off celebrating July the 4th as a true American these days. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you all very, very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.